details of business, not reading whole emails, not reading the details of contracts, and so on. Over time, needless to say, you'll find yourself in business and career hot water. If you have dyslexia or mild language problems, you may also have an excessively emotional and intuitive brain that can lead you to have more stress-related health problems. Why? Many intuitives are very porous and very sensitive. They end up having a lot of autoimmune problems, joint problems, and ultimately their health can cause them to have trouble holding a regular job in the world. The work of Norman Geschwin indicates that people with dyslexia are more likely to have autoimmune illnesses, such as psoriatic arthritis, Hashimoto's disease, scoliosis, migraine headaches, and seizure disorders, to name only a few. Why is this so? It may be that when the brain is developing in the first trimester, if the left brain language areas are developing aberrantly, the thymus, the immune system area, is as well. This is called the Geschwin-Behn-Galliberta hypothesis, and it's very controversial. Every 10 years, a different study is published to support or refute it. If you have dyslexia, a left brain learning disorder with problems in language, though you might have a hyperintuitive right brain, the downside, you may have to deal with a variety of hard-to-treat health problems. If this is you, if you have dyslexia, yet are porous and intuitive, fear not. You can capture your emotional intuitive gifts, but also capitalize on what language you do have in your brain. But you must shore up your immune system, because your intuitive gifts may lead to immune system problems. First, if you have problems with attention, go to the previous chapter and this chapter's clinic and find solutions to hone the focus in your brain, because attention and dyslexia tend to be brain styles that travel together. Go to an acupuncturist and herbalist and have them help strengthen your immune system. If you have autoimmune illnesses, have them build up your kidney and liver yin. If you're concerned that you may have dyslexia, get a neuropsychological assessment for attention, learning, and memory. In addition to telling you if you have ADHD or dyslexia, the board-certified neuropsychologist will help you find a language-based learning center. These reading specialists use a multi-sensory way of teaching you how to read. By learning how to use multiple areas in your brain to read, you can work your way around any little aberrant spots of brain development. Don't limit. Expand your education. Go to your nearest university and look for resources for individuals with dyslexia. Take classes. And if you do have a diagnosis of dyslexia, ask to have your exams given to you with extended times. Many individuals with dyslexia and ADHD get this kind of accommodation because, in that format, they are more able to demonstrate their grasp of the information. In addition, I would go to the career office at the university and talk about various career options that are suitable for your unique brain style. Naturally, if you have a language-based learning disability or dyslexia, you might not want to get a PhD in English literature because, as in this case, you have trouble keeping up with the reading and always be behind the eight ball, despite help from a reading specialist. By talking to your neuropsychologist or a career or vocational counselor at the university, you may be able to find out a vocation or career that is uniquely designed for your unique brain. The affirmations. Louise helps people understand their different learning styles, enable them to have the right career, one in which they'll be exceptional and gifted. Thus, all of us are disabled in one way or another if we're in the wrong career. In essence, Louise says that the only learning disability any of us has is an inability to love our brain style. When we don't love our minds, we tend to have panic and anxiety, which over time may increase our tendency toward autoimmune problems. So, Louise suggests a variety of affirmations. First, a total love and acceptance of our own identity, and second, an affirmation for the panic and anxiety we may experience when we are struggling to keep up in a career that's not adapted to our unique brain style. And then, finally, affirmations that address the health problems, perhaps, in the case of dyslexia, autoimmune problems that may get worse when one is panicked or frustrated with one's learning style. Consider the following affirmations. For acceptance, the affirmation is, I am love. I now choose to love and approve of myself. I see others with love. For fear and anxiety affirmations, go to chapter 2. For health problems like psoriasis, Hashimoto's disease, scoliosis, epilepsy, migraine headache, and others that you may have, go to the book Heal Your Body by Louise Hay for affirmations. Part 3. Right Brain Learning Disorders. A right brain learning disorder is a developmental brain style in which you have difficulties in your day-to-day social and emotional awareness. The usual function of the right brain is being able to be aware of your feelings and simultaneously aware of someone else's. Akin to walking and chewing gum at the same time, we use our right brain to be aware of our nervousness and at the same time know that someone else near us is angry or sad. In addition to balancing our feelings and someone else's, the right brain helps us with boundaries, knowing where our feelings end and someone else begins. In addition to handling, expressing, and comprehending emotion, the right brain also handles paying attention. Whether it's dividing attention between the radio and the road when you're driving, or your computer screen and what your boss is saying in the workplace, this is another juggling act that the right brain performs. Finally, our right hemisphere creates a three-dimensional map of our world. Whether it's being able to actually read a map, comprehend geometry, parallel park, or perceive distance and speed while driving, this visual spatial aspect, though hard to explain, is obvious when you don't have it. So, knowing the usual functions of the right brain, it may be easier for you to imagine what it's like to have been born with a unique brain style. You may have difficulty with eye contact. Why? It may be difficult for you to handle your own feelings and balance those with awareness of emotions in someone else's face. You may have more difficulty expressing your feelings in words, and you may have an even harder time reading the expression of emotion inherent in someone else's facial expression or tone of voice. Social nuance may elude you as you proceed through middle school and high school and beyond. You may feel like you're on the outside looking in socially. Other people may seem to be speaking a social language that you don't know. It's not quite shyness that you feel. It's more the awkwardness of not knowing what to say or do. other people seem to just know the rules of engagement when it comes to dating, going to dances, schmoozing after work, or on the job. Though you feel comfortable hanging out with a family member, or a local historian, or scientist, or older teacher, when it comes to being around groups of people your own age, you feel uncomfortable. Some people have said you may have social anxiety. And then, when you leave to go to college, it may be particularly difficult for you to share a room with a dormmate. You may find yourself arguing over details that are extremely important to you, but that your roommate thinks are ridiculous. You tend to be detail-oriented, somewhat compulsive, and perfectionistic. Once you put something in its place, if someone moves it, you get anxious. You tend to be set in your routines. You tend to be better in such detail-oriented left-brain fields as computers, engineering, and technology, but not social work, psychology, or anthropology. You have a hard time handling the political machinations that are required at work to move up in your career, and you don't understand why. If your work is executed flawlessly, why aren't you advancing as much as that smooth-talking, socially and politically skilled colleague who's not nearly as bright as you? You find yourself saying it's just not fair. You may feel closer to nature and prefer it to having someone nurture you. You may feel more entertained putting together models or Legos or working on a computer than sitting in a coffee house for hours talking to a friend. You're more likely to have allergies, especially digestive allergies, to wheat. You're more likely to have muscle tightness and stiffness in your body, as well as insomnia. Alcoholism may run in your family. And, if you are in a relationship, it's quite possible that your partner has tried to bring you into therapy to get you to talk about your feelings more. You've tried it, and you know what? It wasn't the most productive or practical experience. If this is you or a loved one, congratulations. Though your strengths may not be in your right brain functioning, nonetheless, your left brain capacity for logic, details, and rational thinking in the areas of engineering, science, and math, or other areas that require a left brain thinking style, may be awe-inspiring. In essence, you may have the opposite of the brain style we looked at in the previous section, dyslexia. If dyslexia is a left brain learning disorder, an individual who has exaggerated right brain emotional intuitive gifts, you are someone with a right brain learning disorder, someone with exaggerated left brain language, logic, and linear abilities. Often enough, people with these two opposite brain styles marry, and I've been known to say tongue in cheek, that between the two of them, they have a complete brain. We tend to marry the part of the brain we don't have, or at least the part that doesn't function as well as the rest. This is perhaps what they mean when they say that opposites attract. So, next time you look at your partner and want to change them or her, stop. Think about it. Is that really what you want to do? Because maybe, just maybe, between the two of you, you complement each other and help each other heal your minds so you can create wholeness. However, if you've had a struggle with the obvious or even subtle right brain symptoms, whether it's in groups of people, in relationships or finances, or at work, you can use medicines, nutritional supplements, affirmations, and intuition to create wholeness, whether you're alone or in a relationship. Listen to the following story as we show you how. Patrick, the pathology of superiority. Patrick, 39, called me because he was concerned about his health. The intuitive reading. When I first read Patrick, I saw that he was very sensitive, especially in public places. I saw that it was hard for him to feel completely comfortable around people. Whether at work or at school, it felt like Patrick was only comfortable with people in the family he grew up with. On the other hand, I saw that Patrick was very comfortable with numbers and details, whether it was because they were tidy or because they were logical, it didn't matter. Was it that people made him uncomfortable? Intuitively, I couldn't see people around him. I didn't see a partner or kids, just Patrick alone in a room. The body. The first thing I noticed was that Patrick had very sensitive skin. It felt like red dots appeared on his skin, especially when he ate certain foods. He felt more or less healthy, with the exception of lifelong digestive allergies, specifically to wheat or some other food. These weren't those garden variety wheat allergies that everyone is talking about these days. Patrick never could eat wheat since he was born. If he did, he would double over in pain. The facts. Patrick said he had gone from doctor to doctor, dermatologist to dermatologist, to deal with his eczema. No one could find out what he was allergic to except wheat. In fact, ever since he was a child, he could eat neither wheat nor drink milk. Patrick had called me not mainly for his physical health, but for problems at work. He had gotten fired, not for the first time. He said, "I don't know what's wrong with these managers these days. They certainly aren't interested in doing things the right way." Patrick had worked as an administrative assistant in a publishing house, and then, most recently, at a line editing job, until he got fired once again, and now he was simply doing clerical work. It was an argument with an author over the difference between the words "that" and "which" that had caused the recent firing. Patrick told me, "A fact is a fact. I don't understand why people get so offended when you instruct them on the proper use of grammar and syntax." It was clear that Patrick was having difficulty balancing his superb left-brain language and logical skills with an understanding of right-brain social and emotional nuance in politics, and he was unable to handle two opposing points of view. To balance his logical opinion with the opinions of people he worked with, including his superiors, believing that fact and logic trumped opinions, feelings, and positions. The imbalance led Patrick to perpetual frustration, depression, and anxiety. First, he was angry, thinking, "I'm right, they're wrong, things should be different." Then he was depressed because his unique intellectual abilities weren't valued. Then he was anxious when he realized he lost his job and didn't know how he was going to pay his bills. Patrick had no idea how to even express his frustration, depression, and anxiety, let alone understand why his boss fired him or was angry in the first place. However, the cumulative backlog of feelings got shunted to his adrenal gland, increasing his chance of releasing the stress hormone cortisol. Cortisol, in turn, increased his chance toward having worsening allergies in his body. Patrick added, "Oh, you'd be interested in this. I was in special education when I was a child because I talked late. But look at me now. I'm a very advanced English scholar with a master's degree in English literature. Humph. So much for special ed." The pathology of superiority. Every single one of us has a genius. Like Patrick, you too may have an amazing ability that is somehow related to a weakness somewhere else in your brain. Like a coin with heads and tails, all of our brains have some area of deficiency that is somehow matched with a superlative, of course, depending on degree. In its most extreme form, someone with a dramatic problem in their right brain may be labeled autistic, and their superior abilities may earn them the label of autistic savant. If you're someone with extreme weaknesses in your right brain, you needn't be autistic, I might add. Having extreme difficulty with social and emotional skills may biologically predispose you to having an exaggerated capacity for details, logic, science, and technology. You may be incredibly gifted at calculating numbers, performing technical feats with computer coding, or comprehending and replicating symphonies or art. However, your inability to work in a team environment or social setting will unveil your right brain emotional weaknesses. None of us are perfect. All of us have gradations of weakness to some degree in one hemisphere or the other. Some of us may be pseudo-savants in the right brain emotional and intuitive capabilities that incline us toward being therapists, social workers, psychologists, creative artists, and so on. So what's the solution if you have an extreme brain style? Whether it's the one in this section, extreme left brain skills and right brain deficiency, or the one we saw in the previous section, extreme right brain skills and a relatively weak left brain. The solution. Notice we're getting away from diagnostic labels like dyslexia and right brain learning disability. You needn't have a diagnosis of extreme deficiency in either your right or your left brain to be able to utilize the solutions in this section or the one before. We all can learn how to identify weaknesses in one of our hemispheres versus the other and try to improve them so we can create wholeness in our minds. By utilizing both our right and left brain to the best of our ability, we are in essence learning how to better use our whole brain, not just rest on the laurels of the side we're most comfortable with. The first solution is to apply that dialectical principle of opposites from dialectical behavioral therapy. That is, that you can love yourself, your current brain style, just the way you are, and paradoxically want to be even better. By improving the skills of your other hemisphere, you will not be losing your unique identity. You won't be becoming any less yourself. No one will think you're becoming boring or losing your individuality. That which makes you quirky or unusual or stand out or even excel. Loving yourself just the way you are and wanting to acquire skills in the hemisphere where you're weaker simply makes you adapt better in the world. And by using your whole mind to adapt to the world, you'll be better able to communicate your unique genius and individuality. The next solution is to augment your environment with people or tools to buff up that side of the brain that's not as strong. If you have extreme right brain skills, as in the previous section, you're going to need to hire or marry someone with left brain skills to help you negotiate the world of paperwork, documentation, and standardized testing that is often required for getting one's credentials. Alternately, as in this section, if you tend toward left brain skills with high abilities for order, perfection, logic, and technical capabilities, you need to supplement yourself with the opposite hemisphere as well. With extreme left brain logical capabilities, you may find yourself faltering when it's necessary to negotiate social nuance in the academic world to acquire tenure or in a career, deal with politics and schmoozing to work your way up the ranks. In that sense, you need to marry or hire a right-brain skilled individual who can coach you on how to say the right thing to the right person at the right time. Otherwise, your often logical, fact-based, left-brain-focused mind may tend to step on the toes of those in your family and your work, offending and putting off people in a way you may not even be aware of. The third solution is dialectical behavioral therapy or cognitive behavioral therapy. Using DBT or CBT may help you rewire and strengthen the brain pathways necessary to function with both brains in the world. Specifically, in DBT, one skill based on Tibetan Buddhism and mindfulness, called wise mind, is used to create a whole, balanced brain by helping you identify right brain emotional mind and balance its effects with left brain mental mind. This DBT skill helps you use mindfulness to observe, describe, and allow the creation of a gentle balance between both hemispheres in perception, thoughts, and ultimately how you act with friends, family, and colleagues in the world. There are many other techniques as well. However, a word of caution. If you think because you have done DBT or CBT for a period of 6 months or a year or more, now you're all set. Your brain is normalized. Think again. People who are born left-handed can teach themselves to be ambidextrous, using both hands, or hemispheres, I might add, to move about the world. But in their brain, they are always left-handed. And in times of stress or exhaustion or taxing life events, they will revert to their original pure inborn mindset. Similarly, whatever therapies you do to help bolster or strengthen the hemisphere that's weaker will do the same. Create a pseudo ambidextrous ability in the brain. You can, to some degree, with effort and intention, have more of a whole brain and act accordingly in the world. However, during times of stress, anxiety, depression, grief, illness, you're going to need support from people or your environment to support the part of the brain that you are not naturally gifted in. The affirmations. Ultimately, whatever hemisphere you have weakness in, you may have had challenges with finances, work, and success. As a result, struggling to wrap your mind around the task at hand. Whether it's the enormous amount of reading, writing, and details for left-brain learning problems, or the social and emotional challenges of managing bosses, committees, meetings, shifting alliances, and emotional innuendo in families and at work may leave you with financial and career catastrophes that will bruise your self-esteem and self-image. Many of the affirmations that you'll want to use will involve addressing the problems you've had in your life with money, relationships, and work. Consider the following thought patterns that you may have and the corresponding affirmations from Louise. If you think no one appreciates you at work, my work is recognized by everyone. If you always get dead-end jobs, I turn every experience into an opportunity. If your boss is abusive, I respect myself and so do others. If everyone expects too much of you, I am in the perfect place and I am safe at all times. If your coworkers drive you crazy, I see the best in everyone and help them bring out their most joyous qualities. If your job offers no creativity, my thoughts are creative. If you think you'll never be successful, everything I touch is a success. If you believe there is no chance for advancement, new jobs are opening all the time. If your job doesn't pay well, I am open and receptive to new avenues of income. If your job is too stressful, I am always relaxed at work. The general affirmation is, I give myself permission to be creatively fulfilled. Part 4. Personality Styles, Finding Yourself. We spend our whole lives trying to find happiness, looking for it in our families, relationship, money, work, children, activism in the world, education, and spirituality. But still, we may not feel joy. You may not know it, but you've spent your whole life trying to learn how to be happy. You've been trying to mold your brain circuits toward peace. The Hebrew word shalom means peace, but it also means whole. And when we get older and perhaps wiser, we begin to look for peace and harmony between ourselves and others and mankind in general. Think of it, in many a beauty pageant, when the participants are asked what their platform is, they say, world peace. Whether that's true or said to evoke emotion in the viewer, happiness and peace seem to be that elusive essence that all of us are looking for. We spend our whole lives trying to learn how to acquire it. Every single one of us is born with some difficulty, some challenge in acquiring happiness and peace. Whether it's a problem with depression or irritability, chapter 1, anxiety, chapter 2, addiction, chapter 3, learning, this chapter, and so on, not to mention health problems, we all try to file off the rough edges of our personality and shape ourselves so that we can come closer to peace. All of us have some weakness in our brain, some pattern of flaws in mood, anxiety, addiction, learning, and so on that we need to unravel so we can better adapt to the world. This pursuit of happiness is, in essence, learning how to shape our personality. This section is devoted to the disorder that all of us have in our psyche. The part of our personality wired in our brain that we spent our entire life working on or working through to create happiness. In essence, when we are healing our mind with medicine, affirmations, and intuition, the wholeness, the peace we are trying to achieve is what we call finding ourselves. Finding yourself is trying to add those little bits and pieces to your psyche that are weak or missing, that make it harder for the nutritional supplements, medicines, or therapies of any kind to fix your depression, irritability, anxiety, or other brain problems in a lasting way. So how is personality wired in the brain? Personality is a product of temporal lobe emotions and frontal lobe capacity to curb your feelings so you can keep that job or relationship or fit into society. More or less, there is a continuum of personality styles between three basic categories. Mind you, Do not think I am saying you are one or the other. It's a continuum. At one extreme, there are people who are more hyper-temporal lobe, that is, less emotionally restrained. The other extreme is more hyper-frontal lobe. People who have more of the brakes on and are more restrained. The third style is a combination of characteristics in the temporal lobe and frontal lobe, creating uniqueness, distinctive personalities and eccentricities that often make a person feel like a black sheep or an outsider looking in. Because they swing between the first two personality styles, at times they are prone to emotional intensity, and at other times they can be extremely anxious, restrained, and aloof. To create wholeness in the brain, one needs balance. Yin, ni zhang. We need to offset our right brain with our left. And when it comes to personality, we need to balance our frontal lobe and temporal lobe, just as in the last two sections, when one hemisphere is stronger than the other, if your temporal lobe or frontal lobe dominates over the other, you may find it harder for you to get closer to happiness and peace. Your depression, anxiety, or irritability, the learning disabilities and addictions you have, not to mention the issues with memory, intuition, and spirituality, which you'll hear about in the upcoming chapters, may afford you both challenges and gifts. To create wholeness in this learning style section, again, we learn to love ourselves just the way we are and want to be better. It's easy enough to understand that a weaker frontal lobe will make you less restrained, and a stronger frontal lobe will make you more restrained. But what about those people who are eccentric and unique? What do they do? Do they have to rework both brain areas? Many individuals with this unique, eccentric brain style may feel safer with spirit and the divine than they do with people on earth. In essence, these individuals' primary relationships and work are with spirit. People with this brain style may be mystics or monks or work in spiritual fields, and often may have difficulty feeling accepted by family or society in general. And if you are one of these people, and from time to time I may include myself in this category, you may often want to say, I love myself, so why do I need to fit into this world? Often the things people are concerned about in today's society seem superficial, irrelevant, and to use a word that my dear friend and colleague, Carolyn Mace, uses, pedestrian. Well, if you have this brain style, in which you feel safer with spirit than on people on the earth, too bad. You are still living on the earth, and as long as you do walk on the earth, you too are a pedestrian. Often people with this brain style have a variety of complex, hard-to-treat health problems, including neurological disorders like migraine headaches and seizures, learning disorders of many kinds, thyroid problems, cancers, weight and blood sugar issues, digestive allergies, chronic immune system problems, and multiple joint and spinal issues. Many of the great saints, and I might add, who are not what you'd call ordinary, run-of-the-mill citizens, were unique and eccentric and had both unrestrained personalities at times, hypofrontal lobe, and at other times, overly restrained. More on this in Chapter 6. If this is you, though you may think you're comfortable in this brain style, hanging out with spirit away from earthbound citizens, think again. Your health is likely to suffer if you don't walk with the rest of the herd on earth. you may notice that you and those great saints that have something in common, a lot of health problems. All people's health is improved by having a social network. So, if you are in this third category, and specifically a unique person set apart by the quality of spirituality, a monk of sorts, find yourself a bunch of other monks and mystics to hang out with. It will improve your mood, anxiety, irritability, thyroid and hormonal issues, immune system and weight problems, to name only a few mind-body challenges. Look among these three styles. You may find you are not as extreme at one time of your life as at another. This section on learning styles is about how to shape your personality so you can get along better in the world, whether it's in your family, in your relationships, in your work, with money, and so on. So, when you go through those three basic types on the continuum of personality styles, ask yourself, did you feel that you had difficulty fitting in at grade school, in high school, in college, and at a job? Do you have difficulty curbing your frustration when you have to deal with other people's expectations? Is it hard for you to go after what you want if you're especially aware that you may hurt someone else's feelings or even make them angry? These kinds of questions that prompt your unique brain style, they're endless, but they illuminate your personality style. That is, how you deal with the delicate balance between your feelings and someone else's, between what you want and what society as a whole wants. We spend our whole lives filing the rough edges off of our frontal lobe and temporal lobe personality so we can modify our answers to these questions. After working with medicines, supplements, therapies, and affirmations, it may be easier to utilize the circuits in our brain between our frontal lobe and temporal lobe to feel like we fit in just a little bit more. And after using all those solutions, we may have just a little bit of an easier time curbing our frustration with a boss, a mate, child, or parent who is bearing down with demands. And after healing our minds throughout our lives with medicines, supplements, therapy, and affirmations, it may be just a little bit easier for us to go after what we want, even if we're aware that someone we care about may get angry. By learning across your lifetime with all the solutions in this section, which shape your personality circuits between your temporal lobe and your frontal lobe, you'll be better off to juggle your feelings with someone else's and what you want with what society wants. And in chapter 6, you will learn how to use your right brain and left brain, frontal lobe, and temporal lobe to begin the process of balancing your feelings and what you want with your soul and the divine. Why are they like that? From time to time, I do readings for people who have a difficult mother, a difficult father, a difficult child, and so on. They say things like, "We can't get along. He's so moody. She's so irritable. They stole from me. They abused me." They've been in and out of rehab. They've been in and out of jail. Why are they like that? Why are they so difficult? Why? If they could only act normally, life would be better. If they could only change, my health would be better. If they could only treat me better, life would be sublime. If. Here's the best way I can explain it. Someone with an extreme developmental disorder that causes difficulty with these frontal lobe, temporal lobe connections is similar to someone who has, say, a developmental disorder at birth. Some handicaps are more obvious than others. For example, some children are born with a motor disorder called cerebral palsy. When they start walking, you can see that they lack fluid, smooth movement. So it's obvious when they start walking, you see the flaw in their frontal lobe movement areas. Their handicap is very visible earlier in their life because those brain areas develop early. However, the frontal lobe circuits to curb moodiness, irritability, follow rules in society, and so on. Those circuits don't develop until your teens and 20s. So if a person has a developmental disorder in those brain circuits, the handicap is less obvious because it doesn't involve walking or talking. Those biological flaws in the brain cause developmental effects that are in the personality, which can be profoundly handicapping, as only someone who is a parent, significant other, family member, or spouse can attest. Someone with cerebral palsy or a speech problem will be able to comprehend their flaw and use the appropriate medicines, nutritional supplements, therapies, and affirmations to help themselves. However, unfortunate as it is, individuals who have extreme frontal lobe deficits in judgment, social restraint, and rules don't have that insight or the desire to shape their personality in healthier directions. They are very satisfied with the way they are and painfully believe that all their problems, be they legal, financial, vocational, or otherwise, are the fault of the people around them. And so, when I work with someone who says their mother was selfish or narcissistic, or their father was a sociopath and was in jail, or their child broke into houses and got arrested several times, I try to explain this extreme frontal lobe, temporal lobe developmental brain disorder to them. Although it does not make these individuals less responsible for their behavior, it's important that we understand they were born with brains that challenge them. It's with this understanding of personality types, personality quirks, and shaping one's personality toward happiness that we go on to the following case. Sarah, escaping perpetual crisis. Sarah called me for a reading because she said she was having trouble getting to sleep. The intuitive reading. When I first started reading Sarah, her house felt like a MASH unit. I could hear the phones going around and around and around, ringing, ringing, ringing. Her thoughts would go around and around in her head. I had a hard time seeing Sarah in a significant relationship with anybody else other than her phone. Sarah seemed to work long hours into the night at some kind of job. It seemed like she was always paying bills, paying bills, paying bills, and then I would see Sarah on the phone trying to get through to someone trying to change his or her point of view. The body. There was a pressure in Sarah's head. It felt like she was hitting her head against a brick wall. Did she have problems with antibodies directed against her thyroid? I saw a change in heart rhythm, some kind of skipping of a beat. I wondered if Sarah was concerned about densities in her chest around her breasts, especially on the left side. In addition, I wondered whether Sarah's frustration and panic increased her adrenal glands' capacity to make estrogen and cortisol. However, as I was reading her body, I kept seeing her on the phone trying to get through to someone. The facts. Sarah told me that, yes, she had been diagnosed with breast cancer in her left breast, but she told me the reading was really about her daughter, Ruby. She said You're right. I was always on the phone trying to get through to my daughter. My daughter has a very painful life. She's been struggling with unstable mood and behavior throughout her whole life. Although she's doing better since we've paid for her to go to all those expensive rehabs for alcohol abuse and cocaine, we're just not able to get medicine stable for her depression and panic. Sarah didn't know if her daughter had a personality disorder, PTSD, or bipolar 2. The solution. Are you, like Sarah, thinking your problem and your mind and body are only one symptom? Sarah first thought her central problem was insomnia. Then, after a while, she admitted she was worried about her daughter, whom she couldn't get through to because her daughter might have some personality disorder. All of our personalities affect our moods, our anxiety, and our capacity to learn, whether it's in its most severe form, as in Sarah's daughter, or in its mildest form, or somewhere in between. If you, yourself, have a problem with depression, irritability, panic, addiction, or an array of health problems, don't just work on each of these individual problems. Learn to shape the features of your personality so you can better adapt between your feelings and someone else's and society in general. Otherwise, you may find that your medicines, nutritional supplements, therapies, and affirmations will work for only a while. And then, invariably, something will change in your family or relationship, your finances, or your work, and then you're likely to lose it. Lose the balance of wholeness you've achieved. You'll think you need to tinker with the meds or the supplements, switch therapists, add affirmations, or look for food or environmental allergies, and so on. You may even, for the moment, consider a variety of relationship allergies as well, thinking that removing a person or a job, or even moving geographically, will make you happier. Maybe. But you know the phrase, wherever you go, there you are. Everyone has someone in their life like Sarah's daughter. Everyone is going to find someone, whether it's a mother or a father, a boyfriend or a girlfriend or a boss, that they'll feel the impulse to get through to. If only we could get them to change, we would be happier, and then we would not be depressed or anxious, definitely not irritable, and we would sleep better, eat better, and be at peace. World peace. I don't think so. It doesn't work that way. If your health and happiness are dependent on someone else changing, you have problems. Cognitive behavioral therapy, dialectic behavioral therapy, mindfulness, and affirmations are all tools that can help you learn to change someone, and that someone is you. Yes, you may suggest for a minor child whose moods and behavior are veering out of control to get into the right kind of therapy or medicine. All the while, though, we all need to learn that when someone in our life has mind-body challenges, we may help them, but we also need to employ a DBT skill called radical acceptance. Radical acceptance involves learning the balance between willfulness, changing a situation, and willingness to accept that things will happen the way they happen. Radical acceptance does not mean you are pleased with the results of what happened to your friend, family member, and so on, or that you feel it's fair, right, or just. Radically accepting the situation and your life that's keeping you up at night is the only way out of your suffering, to perpetually try to get through to them or to change them only increases your chance of being chronically depressed, irritable, and anxious, and such emotions may potentially lead you to addiction and a host of health problems. We know that those chronic emotions can injure your adrenal gland hormones, changing levels of estrogen and cortisol, influencing your immune system. I suggest you seek out dialectic behavioral therapy. Go to www.behavioraltherapy.org. www.behavioraltherapy.org and ask for someone who knows DBT. When you call, they may or may not ask you if you have borderline personality disorder. However, DBT is often used for many people with medication-resistant depression, anxiety, moodiness, and PTSD, as well as family members of people with severe disorders of mental illness. If you are in a long-term relationship with someone who has these kinds of emotional problems, understand that the perpetual crisis will increase your own chances of perpetual health problems. DBT and CBT will help you figure out more skillful ways of creating peace and wholeness in your own life rather than simply changing them. The affirmations. If you want to create wholeness and happiness in your life, join the club. We're all in it. You can learn how to love yourself just the way you are and also unveil and unearth more and more of your true self through affirmations. Consider the following affirmations to help you heal your mind to create wholeness and happiness. I am willing to change. Life is very simple. Remember, we are dealing with thoughts, and thoughts can be changed. We can change our attitude toward the past. In my mind, I have total freedom. I now move into a new space of consciousness where I'm willing to see myself differently. I am willing to create new thoughts about myself and my life. My new thinking becomes my new experiences. The universe is more than willing to manifest my new beliefs, and I accept this abundant life with joy, pleasure, and gratitude, for I am deserving. I accept it. I know it to be true. Chapter 5. Memory. Now that you've listened this far in the book, we take all of the information you've listened to and we turn to the subject of memory. What is memory? Memory is taking what we've experienced in the past and turning it into wisdom. You can read all kinds of esoteric academic books about what memory is or isn't, how to sharpen it, or what happens when you lose it. However, if we can't incorporate those two common themes about what memory is, we will not be able to help ourselves when this important brain function seems to slip beyond our grasp. Before we talk about being worried about losing our memory, now or in the future, it's important to understand how living in the present impacts the memory circuits in our brain and body. Vis-a-vis how our memory works connecting the times in our life, I watched the movie Alice Through the Looking Glass, where Alice tries to connect the past, present, and future. But the Mad Hatter, who is allegedly not supposed to have that much wisdom, shows he actually does when he states profoundly, "Don't try to connect the past and the future because it will blow up the present." Actually, I hope I'm remembering the quote correctly. In fact, that's the point. To some degree, all of us have quirky memory, whether it's due to a tendency in our brain toward depression, anxiety, irritability, learning problems like ADHD, dyslexia, right brain disorder, or others. Whether you've had trauma across your life, physical and emotional health problems in the past or the present, all these issues can distort your memory circuitry to a degree. How you laid down memory in your brain in the past and the wisdom you receive in the future really depend on how you heal your mind to create wholeness in the present. Maybe it's true to biologically or psychologically try to alter your memory in the past if it takes so much time in your present life. You simply won't be living, acquiring, and learning knowledge for the future. So therefore, as we learn about memory and all its disorders, and you're afraid of losing it, whether you feel that your brain isn't working well now, or you're afraid of getting Alzheimer's disease in the future, stop. Yes, it's important to work on one's brain and body to maximize one's health now and in one's later years with nutritional supplements, herbs, medicines, cognitive behavioral therapy, affirmations, and so on. But the most potent medicine that will dementia-proof your brain now and for the rest of your life is daily learning, changing, and acquiring wisdom as an individual and alongside everyone else in your world. It is possible to live throughout our lives with a keen, sharp mind. We are not destined to have dementia. I repeat, we are not destined to have dementia or other forms of memory loss. I remember when I was 12, we would hear that this person had hardening of the arteries, or that person had senility, another word for dementia. At that point, it seemed